This is Northwest News from KPLU. 35 years ago, a cruise ship left from Vancouver bound for Japan, but the MS Princeton never made it. It sank in the Gulf of Alaska about 200 miles west of Juneau. Every single person aboard was saved in one of the largest high seas rescues in maritime history. The survivors reunited recently in Seattle. KPLU's Ed Ronco was there.
At Coast Guard Base Seattle, some crewmen are lowering the U.S. flag as the sun sets over the Olympic Mountains. Mallory Graham is watching it from the porch of a nearby building.
I'm such a sucker for that. I think when you've been rescued too, there's something about like men in uniform. You're always just going to be grateful to them and have some little bit of nostalgia come up when you hear things like that.
Graham lives in Seattle, and she's at the Coast Guard base for a reunion. Behind her is a gymnasium full of survivors of the MS Princeton, a Holland America cruise ship that sank in the Gulf of Alaska 35 years ago. Many of the people on the Cross-Pacific cruise in 1980 were in their 60s and 70s. Many of the rescuers, a third that age, 18, 19, 20. So these days, reunions are made up more of responders than passengers. But Mallory Graham was 13 years old when she and her dad boarded the Princeton. John Graham, then in his late 30s, had been working as a U.S. Foreign Service officer and was hired to give some onboard lectures about international relations. Today he's in his 70s, and he says the job was a little more than lecturing.
And it turned out after the first night, part of my job also was to waltz blue-haired widows around the dance floor, but I didn't know that then.
After 3 days traveling up the Inside Passage, the ship made for open sea in the Gulf of Alaska. Mallory Graham had gone to sleep in her cabin after a long, full day. Then came an announcement. Smoke in the engine room, they said, but they're working to clear it out. It didn't sound too serious, so Mallory Graham went back to bed.
And then a little bit later on, my dad woke me up, and there was another announcement that we haven't been able to clear out the smoke, so we're doing live entertainment and free food up on the Lido deck.
Up on deck, entertainers were performing. Selections from a Rodgers and Hammerstein review.
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain.
On some level, it might have been good in terms of there was no panic among the passengers. Everyone was fairly calm. But we really had no idea that anything was wrong.
Beneath them, something was very wrong. A fire in the engine room, and it was growing.
So suddenly, it was no longer, there's no problem, there's just a little smoke. It was, we were outside, and I could see the flames at the other side of the ship. And so it pretty quickly became, oh my God, let's get us off this boat as fast as possible.
In the middle of the night, the more than 500 people aboard the Princeton abandoned ship into the lifeboats.
The fact that there were almost 90 people in a lifeboat designed for 45, or I think 47 it said, meant that we were warmer, because no one had warm clothes.
Nearby ships, the Sohio Intrepid and the Williamsburg, answered the SOS. The Coast Guard cutters Boutwell, Mellon, and Woodrush responded, along with helicopters and planes from the Coast Guard, the U.S. Air Force, and the Royal Canadian Air Force. In lifeboat number 2, Mallory and John Graham knew a storm was coming, the remnants of Typhoon Vernon. And as they waited for rescue, the boats themselves drifted away from one another and from the ship.
I remember once, shortly before noon, a crewman, who should have known better, got up in the middle of that lifeboat and he shouted at the top of his lungs in broken English that we were all going to die. He just kind of completely lost it. And a woman from New Jersey, from one of New Jersey's oldest, finest families, I know because I'd waltzed her around the dance floor the night before, she got up and she belted this guy in the face. She said, "How dare you? Sit down and shut up." And he did, and that averted a moment of panic.
John Graham says at first, the evacuation into the lifeboats was kind of an adventure. Mallory Graham remembers it much the same way.
A helicopter came over our lifeboat, and they sent down a metal basket, and they took one person up, one at a time. And the movie Star Wars had just come out, right? So it had just been out a couple years earlier. And the man who was hauling up the basket was wearing a white helmet and an orange jumpsuit. And I was sure that I was being rescued by Luke Skywalker.
As the rescue continued, the storm approached. Winds picked up. seas began churning. So did stomachs. Women and children were hoisted first from lifeboat number 2. John Graham says that was a decision reached by the passengers based just on what they'd seen in movies. John Graham watched as his daughter was lifted away from him and into a helicopter. And as afternoon wore into evening, he and a handful of people awaited their hoist. And the storm grew worse.
The people that were left, the last 8 people there, I think were pretty, we were ready to die. We knew the odds were that we were going to die. If I had to die then, these were a good 7 people to die with.
As the storm intensified, the remaining passengers on lifeboat number 2 saw the Coast Guard cutter Boutwell crashing toward them through the waves. John Graham caught a line from the cutter and tied it off. The ocean heaved and the line ripped away a side of the lifeboat. Crewmen from the cutter lowered something called a horse collar. It's a rescue strap on the end of a huge pole. And one by one, the people aboard the lifeboat positioned the collar underneath their arms and around their backs. The time for polite hoisting was over.
These guys on decks would all heave as hard as they could, and we'd go flying off through the air. So like we were like a piece of tuna or a tuna, we kept flying through the air, flopping down on the deck.
Finally, they were aboard the Boutwell, bruised, cold, but alive. There are so many parts to this story, and it is impossible to tell them all here. One helicopter had an electrical fire on board and barely made it back to the shore. Another had to set down on a nearby ship after almost running out of fuel. An entire lifeboat was almost lost until someone radioed that there were 2 Canadian parajumpers aboard it who were unaccounted for.
There were like 150 moving parts in all of this, all the way down to communications facilities in San Francisco. And they made it all work together. I mean, to pull 530 people off in the middle of a typhoon in the Gulf of Alaska in October and not lose a life was a friggin' miracle, but also was due to their professionalism.
John and Mallory Graham were transported to different towns in Alaska. John was taken to Sitka, 180 miles southeast. Mallory to Valdez, 300 miles north, without her dad.
And I was totally, alone on my own. I didn't know anyone. And when I think about that at the time and being 13 years old, I was like, wow. But, you know, you've also just been in, 30-foot seas, been throwing up over the side of a lifeboat. So at that point, you're like, well, okay, whatever comes next, I can do this.
Mallory Graham flew to Anchorage and then to Seattle, where she was reunited with her father. A photo from the Seattle Times shows Mallory stepping off the plane at SeaTac Airport and walking into her father's arms. Ed Ronco, KPLU News.